Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And if you've been watching the news this week, you know that today is Sunday. It's July 30th, 2023. And the most dangerous place to be overnight tonight is between Devin Archer and the Joe Biden Syndicate Department of Justice. That's right. Are you aware of Devin Archer? He asks. He's extremely attractive. And she doesn't know who he is. He's a crook. He's a former business partner of the Biden crime syndicate there. And he's scheduled to testify about what he knows tomorrow in front of the U.S. House of Representatives. On Monday, he's scheduled to testify and possibly say things that are embarrassing for the Biden crime syndicate. That's if he survives the night without getting arrested or killed. It's like it's dead jail or rock and roll for Devin Archer. You better look out. How's he in a position to testify? That's what Hillary's wondering. Hillary's probably laughing at Biden. Ha, 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 Joe. You're supposed to make the proper arrangements. Someone like Devin is supposed to be found dead in the park, Joe. You know, with a couple of self-inflicted gunshot wounds. For crying out loud, Joe. You could have him fall off a paddleboard and drown or something. Just get it done. What a bunch of amateurs. That was Hillary Clinton on the Devin Archer testimonies. Okay, and from there, we go into the Mark of the Beast file this week, where we check in with the federal government's ban on incandescent light bulbs. Yes, the long-awaited total ban on all incandescent light bulbs for all time goes into effect on Tuesday, August 1st, 2023. And the Post-Millennial reports it as, they say, the Biden administration's ban on incandescent light bulbs goes into effect on Tuesday. Now, if I'm not mistaken, this is not a Biden administration thing. I mean, they might be the ones to implement the final cut. But this whole light bulb ban goes back at least a decade. I've been talking about it for at least 10 years. The frightened adolescents and their guilt trip over destroying the planet because they've never contributed anything to society, and so they just feel terrible about themselves. They feel like banning light bulbs, it's like to appease the gods of the climate cult. So this ban, this official final ban on incandescent light bulbs does not prohibit consumers from owning incandescent bulbs, but it prohibits manufacturers from producing them, and it prohibits stores from selling them. And violators could be fined up to $542 per bulb. There's a per bulb fine that could go as high as $542 per bulb. And so you know how you can tell that a law or a regulation was churned out of an arbitrary and capricious bureaucracy? You can tell when the punishment reads like that. You could face a fine up to $542. Not $500. $542. And it's not even for sure $542. It could be up to $542, depending on what kind of attitude you show about those light bulbs that we caught you with. So there you have it. So now those of us who sell incandescent light bulbs, we have some in our pantry left over from back before back when you could buy incandescent light bulbs. We have some left over.
And we don't use them anymore.
We don't use them, no, because they're hard to find, and now they don't match the other bulbs, you know, because now you've got all the LED bulbs and the fluorescent bulbs. We've got a bunch of those, too. But if we were to put the incandescent bulbs up for sale, then we would technically be criminals, be outlaws. I mean, we wouldn't be like the Biden syndicate or anything like that, but we would be doing criminal activity. So there you have it, America, from the land of the brave and the home of the free, the home of the free and the land of the brave and all of that, to a humiliated bunch of frightened adolescents, ruled by a bunch of busybodies, deciding what kind of light bulb you can or cannot manufacture or sell. It's just pathetic and sad. And now, speaking of pathetic and sad, I was going to say something about Sinead O'Connor, but and it was going to be, well, I was going to say, you know, so Sinead O'Connor died this past week, and nobody's quite sure how she died, but so far authorities have said that they don't see any suspicious circumstances. And so what I was going to say was that, there hasn't been an autopsy yet, but it doesn't look suspicious. And the reason it doesn't look suspicious is because Sinead O'Connor's suicide has been expected by most casual observers since the late 1990s. So it's just like, it's just a matter of time. We could have had a pool going. But then I read into the story and I realized how sad her story is. Her son killed himself back in January of this year. And the suicide of her son is more than likely what led to her untimely death. And I just thought how sad that is. Even though I never really cared for her art or her personality, but I just can't imagine the devastation of having your child kill themselves. And for Ms. O'Connor, there just must have been a tremendous amount of guilt and just torture in her mind. Just overall. And then to be a lost sinner on top of that, someone who hates God. And so just, yeah, so there's really nothing suspicious about her suicide. And when it comes out exactly how it occurred, then they'll cross the T's and dot the I's, but nobody will be all that surprised. It's very sad. All right, so we move from that to something that's a little bit more encouraging. We have a report from the Moscow Times. The Moscow Times is a CIA State Department propaganda organ, and it has been since the collapse of the Soviet Union. It's basically an English language propaganda organ of the CIA that's directed at citizens in Russia. And they reported this past week that President Vladimir Putin has signed a controversial law that bans legal and surgical sex changes. So they say it's controversial because that's their opinion, because they work for the CIA and the State Department. They're a bunch of pedophiles and perverts, weirdos and creeps. And so they find it controversial. And what Vladimir Putin did was he signed into law a common sense and proper ban on just entertaining deranged people and helping them to mutilate themselves. The Moscow Times says that the new law deprives transgender Russians of the right to access gender-affirming services. Services, including with a scalpel and other services that affirm the gender, as long as it's the opposite gender of the sex you were born with. See, they got me using the term gender, for crying out loud. Gender-affirming services? I mean, that sounds really Orwellian, creepy, weird. So the law that Putin signed also bans individuals who have undergone sex reassignment surgery from adopting children, and it annuls marriages in which one of the two partners alleges that they have changed sexes. So, the law enters into force immediately. So as soon as Putin finished signing it, it was in effect, which, I mean, if you're going to do a law, that's the way to do it. So, Vladimir Putin, what can we say about him? Vladimir Putin is a former KGB agent. There's a good chance that if he could, he would rob you. There's just as good a chance that if you opposed him, that he would imprison you. And it's highly likely that if you opposed him too much, that he would kill you or he would have you killed. So all of those are distinct possibilities with Vladimir Putin. Vladimir Putin does not want to molest or transgender your child, because Vladimir Putin is just an old-fashioned dictator that we can actually relate to. And that's a sign of the times, if nothing else. All right. Now, we go from the East, where Vladimir Putin has banned sex change surgeries. We come back over to the West, where a new study from the Marriage Foundation over in Great Britain, the formerly Great Britain, suggests that nearly half of British children no longer live with both of their biological parents by the time they reach 14 years of age. A majority. Nearly a majority don't have both their parents by the time they're 14. And out of these cases, 70% of those are a result of the breakup of non-married couples. So mom and dad were never even married in the first place, and they broke up. And so despite the hysteria over Vladimir Putin banning bizarre sex change operations, this is a civilizational ending level event that's occurring in slow motion in Europe right now. And I'm sure this study reflects realities in Western Europe as well as in the United States. We're watching in slow motion the tragic collapse of Western civilization. And what can I say? It's a tragedy. A bunch of humiliated adolescents who obviously are unqualified to raise children walk away from raising those children. Is anyone surprised? No one's surprised. And speaking of, I had mentioned the death, the suicide. Forget the death of a child. The death of a child has to be extraordinarily painful. The suicide of a child, incomprehensibly painful. A generation of children without parents is off the charts civilization-ending level event. And it's the end of a civilization. And from there, let's go to the end of the world. We go into the end of the world file, where we go to Chicago. Well, it's not Chicago, actually. It's south of Chicago. Lafayette, Indiana, a medium-sized city located 60 miles northwest of Indianapolis. A couple there was arrested. Deonta Jermaine Johnson, 27 years old, and Shatia Tiara Welsh, 24 years old. That's a man and a woman. I can't tell which is which, but one is a father and one is a mother of two young children. They've been arrested. Each parent has been charged with one count of neglect of a dependent resulting in death, two counts of neglect resulting in endangerment, one count each of neglect resulting in bodily injury, conspiracy to commit dealing of a narcotic drug, possession of a narcotic, conspiracy to commit dealing of marijuana, dealing marijuana, possession of marijuana, and possession of paraphernalia. Why so many charges? Well, this case alone could carry between 4 and 6 bureaucrats in the justice system, could carry 4 to 6 of them into a comfortable retirement by the time it all winds its way through court. All the T's are crossed, the I's are dotted, and someone is perhaps convicted, someone is perhaps sentenced. Oh, the man was also charged with one count of obstructing justice, just for good measure. What happened? What are the circumstances? Well, the 5-year-old boy found a gun in the house and he shot the 1-year-old once in the head, killing him. toxicology results showed the toddler who was killed tested positive for marijuana in his system, and the older brother, the 5-year-old who shot the toddler, he had cocaine in his system. So that's the end of the world for the toddler. And it just feels like, when you read something like this, that the end of the world is closing in on all of us. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the Weekly Worldview, where we go to, from the end of the world, we come back from the edge of the end of the world, to the widespread heartbreak file where Revolver reports that LeBron James' 18-year-old son, Bronny, had a heart attack playing basketball at USC. And immediately, the mainstream media was flooded with reports on actually how it's just not that uncommon for healthy young athletes to collapse of cardiac arrest. Especially really famous celebrity. You know, we just notice it more now because, you know, radio, TV, the internet, and all instant communication, social media. And so, but it happens. It happened all the time. So, In fact, Bronny was not the first USC young healthy athlete to collapse of cardiac arrest. 18-year-old Vince Iwachukwu collapsed on the court during a summer 2022 workout over there at USC, which mandated all the COVID vaccines for everyone if you wanted to come. Bronny attended Sierra Canyon High School, where strict COVID vaccination mandates were enforced. But this happened all the time before, and it has nothing to do with anything at all to do with anything to do with that. So let's just move along and go into the politics file where, well, we've been talking about family. We have the theme of family, the implosion of family that is occurring in slow motion, collapsing Western civilization in upon itself. And that brings us to the politics file where Joe Biden has acknowledged his 7th grandchild. Joe Biden's acknowledgments of his 7th grandchild comes after Maureen Dowd wrote a piece about it in the New York Times. In the piece, Maureen Dowd accused Uncle Joe of, quote, callously scarring young Navy's life just as it gets started. Navy is the girl's name. I'm not going to say her last name because I don't want to say her last name. Her name shouldn't even be associated with any of this. It's a shame that it is. So none of us have control over the circumstances of our birth, and this poor girl, just tragic. Biden, after Maureen Dowd's, rather pointed column, Joe Biden issued a statement because he certainly didn't want to stand up in front of anyone and actually say anything. But he issued a statement in an interview to People magazine. Our son Hunter and the child's mother are working together to foster a relationship that is in the best interests of their daughter, preserving her privacy as much as possible. Just... So the self-serving political hypocrisy in that statement is so thick you can cut it with a knife. And I'm not going to spend too much time on Joe Biden because, I mean, we all know what Joe Biden is. Just one of the sleaziest men in one of the sleaziest families to ever garner public attention. Just to the detriment of all who ever heard of them. Right? Just the sleaziest, the lowest. Anyway, you notice how they mentioned the best interests of their daughter and preserving her privacy. Is that why you didn't acknowledge her for so long? For the sake of her privacy? And whose best interests exactly are you looking out for, Joe? And Jill? And Jim? And Hunter and the rest of the syndicate? So when it became obvious that even liberals were very uncomfortable with the fact that Joe Biden could be this big of a lowlife, that he realized he has to fake like he's not that low. And so he acknowledges that the girl exists in that. Anyway, the Bidens are exactly the political leaders that an increasingly godless nation deserves. They are exactly what we deserve. Now, it's innocent little kids like this little girl who are scarred for life by us getting the politicians we deserve. And that's a tragic shame. So no one has encouraged Hunter Biden to marry this girl's mother and raise the child. For all I know, Hunter Biden is married to one of his sisters or cousins or sister. I have no idea. He's a creepy weirdo. But one thing that could help turn around Hunter Biden's life would be if he just did the right thing here. Take responsibility, marry the girl, and raise the child, and get a job. Anyway, so there you have that. It's a shame that the beginning of the life of an innocent young child ends up in the politics file on a talk show, but it's the tragic consequences of sin and wickedness and evil and corruption. And our tolerance for it gets us the politicians we deserve. And so, speaking of getting what you deserve, let's go north of the border to our good friends and cousins up there in Canada. This is from the DIE file. I said DIE. Up in Toronto, Principal Richard Biltzko is suing the Toronto District School Board over treatment he received during mandatory diversity training sessions. That's right. So in order to keep his job and to get the pittance that the Toronto District School Board issues to him twice a month in his salary, Principal Richard Biltzko, I don't know how to pronounce his name anyway, but I'll just call him Biltzko because it's difficult. There's too many consonants smooshed together. B-I-L-K-S-Z-T-O, Biltzko, Biltzko? All right. So in order to get the pittance that he earned, he had to bend the knee to the DIE mob and undergo mandatory diversity training sessions, at which session Kiki Ojo Thompson, who is the CEO of the Kojo Institute, that's right, that the Kojo Institute is one of the institutes that is employed by the Toronto District School Board to implement diversity training sessions, DIE trainings, and inflict them upon the staff there, especially the white people. So who is Kiki Ojo Thompson? Well, she's the head of an institute, don't you know? And so because she's the head of the CEO, as a matter of fact, the Kojo Institute, it's an institute of one belligerent malcontent named Kiki Ojo Thompson. It's a race hustler and a DIE hustler and a Black Lives Matter Antifa type who's making money being hired by the government to harass people. Anyway, let's see. Hotair.com goes on to report that such DIE training, they call it diversity training, it's routine in Canada. But what happened was Principal Biltzko, instead of going along with being humiliated as a white guy, he stood up to the trainer and talked back to her. And so Kiki Ojo Institute, She told him to shut up and sit down because he was white. And anyway, some unpleasantness ensued, apparently. And everyone was made very uncomfortable. At the next session, the CEO of the Kojo Institute, Kiki, referred to Biltzko's comments as an example of resistance and white supremacy. And she said that his reference to so-called facts was an attempt to discredit her, which is probably true. The best way to discredit a liar is to refer them to the facts, and she was highly offended by that. I can tell you that. So Biltzko goes on leave, and because he is a pathetic, effeminate, soft, suburban wuss, he files a claim with the Workplace Safety and Insurance Board. So instead of doing the dignified thing and walking out in a huff and getting another job, he continued to cower and kneel before the powers that be, and took his harassment case before the board. They made a decision that they were satisfied that the conduct of Kiki was in fact abusive. Kiki Ojo's comments rise to the level of workplace harassment and bullying. You know, if you're over 11 and you're accusing someone of bullying, you're a wuss. Just come on. Anyway, so Mr. Biltzko supine, and he attempted to return to work because, I don't know, how could you ever return to a place like that? But he did. I mean, he's a guy without a lot of options, apparently. Probably has a degree in education. So he attempted to return to work, but he says he felt shut out. And now last week, Biltzko's attorney has announced that he killed himself. Well, he announced on Twitter that Mr. Biltzko had died by suicide. It's as if suicide snuck up on him or hit him in a car accident. Anyway, he killed himself over all of this. And so I read the story and I'm thinking, what's worse? The leftist abuse that this poor guy had to suffer? Or this guy's selfish, pathetic response? What's worse? Both are to be condemned. So suicide is one of the most selfish, evil things any person can commit against other people and society in general. And DIE training is one of the most evil, horrible, awful things to ever be foisted upon anyone ever. Anyone advocating such things should be arrested. They should be arrested for fomenting riots, for crying out loud. If you keep telling people to hate each other, eventually they'll start killing each other, you idiot. I mean, is that what you want, Kiki? Because, by the way, Kiki, you're going to be the first one fed to the lions. So by the people who employed you and paid you. Yeah, at some point, you're going to fail the loyalty test. You're going to fail the race test. And you're going to be the one sent to the guillotine. And so, folks, whether this is Canada, the United States, wherever it is, flee the government schools. I mean, flee Canada, right? I mean, they've already got horrible weather, lousy food. Why would it? Now they have DIE. So why would anyone stay in Canada after this? So flee the public schools, flee Canada. And if you go into the office and they say that you have to subject yourself to DIE training, just go somewhere else. I mean, have some faith that if you have any skill and any value as a human being, and you have faith in God, that God is going to provide you with a way to make a living and feed your family. You don't have to be a coward and humiliate yourself before the communists. For crying out loud, stand up like a man. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney, where we now, that brings us to What was attempted to be the biggest story of the week. It was alleged to be the biggest story of the week. It was teased the most last week. And it's something we've been talking about for at least 20 years. That's right. Aliens! Back in the news. And we have a report here from One American News, which is an alternative conservative news outlet. Who have all the news outlets, whether they're conservative, liberal, frothing at the mouth, socialist, or Fox News, which is uncategorizable, just fake, phony fake, disgusting, foul fake Fox. All of them have been forced to report on David Grush's testimony. That's right, up before Congress. David Grush is a former military intelligence officer who faced retaliation for becoming a whistleblower, he says. Okay, well, who cares if he says that, One American News? I mean, is this story been generated by AI, or did you guys... So you can't have a prima facie assertion of unsubstantiated facts this early in the story. That should set off your propaganda alarm. The yellow light should start flashing. Gee, maybe this is propaganda. So he says he faced retaliation. Well... Where? So what if he says that? And who cares that he's a former military intelligence officer? There's all kinds of them that are idiots. I mean, for crying out loud, he could have served most of his time under Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, Barack Obama, three of the worst and stupidest people ever to hold the presidency and to organize the intelligence community. So am I supposed to be impressed that this guy schlepped through a career in the intelligence? Oh, wow. Anyway, he says that agencies have been withholding information about a particularly mysterious unidentified aerial What are UAPs? A phenomenon. Now, he says they got a craft. They've been hiding a craft, he says. They've got a spaceship. He doesn't quite say that, though. He leaves a lot of wiggle room when you actually listen to his testimony. But we should listen to him because he served for 14 years as an intelligence officer. So that's an appeal to authority that's meaningless to me. I could care less that he served as an... I think I already said that. Anyway, he says that he... Listen to this. He was informed of a multi-decade UAP crash retrieval and reverse engineering program. Oh, he was informed about it, huh? Well, what does that mean? Huh? I was informed the other day that the earth is flat. I've been looking into it ever since. I'm not going to go to Congress and testify about it, but I will look into the possibility. Okay, so Mr. Grush says, I was informed over the course of my official duties of a multi-decade UAP graduate reverse engineering program to which I was denied access. So something was reported to him, and then he didn't see it. And so he's going to go testify in Congress about it because I'm not really sure, but probably because I don't know. I mean, I hate to be a total cynic, but it almost seems like somebody wants this story to gin up interest for some nefarious reason to distract us from something. So maybe the impending collapse of the banking system. They'll just point to the, yo, no, don't look at the banks. Look, aliens. Okay. So anyway, notice he was denied access to it, which means he now has plausible deniability when it turns out that everything he says is complete hooey. Or when it turns out that what the government's been covering up are legitimate secret programs, spying on other countries and technologies that we don't know about and things like that. That could all be true. But the whole UFO part, when that all turns out to be fake, phony fake, this guy will say, well, I never actually said I saw it. I was denied access. Anyway, let's see. He went on to accuse the military of misappropriating funds to cover up the program. And he says he has personally interviewed officials with direct knowledge of aircraft with non-human origin. So he's interviewed people who he says have direct knowledge of... It doesn't matter what he says after that. They just wanted to get that non-human part in there. Oh, yeah, it's non-human. It's created by other intelligent life. It's the same aliens that are about to collapse the banking system, and they're about to attack. And all right, let's see. We have a quote from Representative Tim Burchett, who is from Tennessee, which automatically, to be elected a congressman in Tennessee, you have to bamboozle maybe 36 people. So why should I care what this guy has to say? He's just a useful idiot moron who got himself elected in Tennessee. But he says, we're going to uncover the cover-up, unquote. Great. That's wonderful. Now, One American News goes on with the big story of the week. That's right. The Pentagon has officially denied all of these claims by this whistleblower. And then, on top of that, Defense Department spokeswoman Sue said officially that they have not been reverse engineering extraterrestrial materials in the past or currently. Unquote. She says, in the past or currently. She could have just said, we haven't been doing that. But she's a bureaucrat. Bureaucrats always use a lot of extra words. In the past or currently. But you already said you haven't. That's okay. They don't speak all that much English. Now, the testimony continued where a former Navy pilot named Ryan also testified. And we're supposed to be impressed with Ryan because he's a Navy pilot. And now being a Navy pilot is impressive. But when a Navy pilot starts talking about dark gray, black cubes, unknown objects, and let's see, what does he say here? He says, I saw a dark gray, a black cube inside a clear sphere where the apex or the tips of the cubes were touching the inside of that sphere. So the guy saw something he doesn't recognize. So for whatever that's worth, he says he saw unknown objects. Okay, so then why are you telling me about them? They're unknown. But he is. A fellow pilot had also told Graves that he saw something. Oh, really? So you heard another guy who said he saw something. Okay, let's write that down. This is important. It's all coming together now. Now, after these two guys, is it two guys? No, now it's, there's Graves and there's the guy who he said saw something. And then you've got Grush and the other people who he said he heard that they saw something.
Oh, Jesus.
We got all these, there's like 25 people here now. And now bring in David Fravor, the retired Navy commander who saw who shot the TikTok video. Oh, I'm sorry, TikTok. The TikTok video. We've all seen that one, right? That's the one where something looking like a TikTok does all kinds of crazy things on the screen. It was shot off the coast of California in 2004. So they brought the TikTok guy, David Fravor, former commander, the TikTok video guy. They brought him in and he testified. And he said he spotted a smooth, seamless, oval-shaped object hovering above the water. The object rose to 12,000 feet. It accelerated and disappeared. It was spotted less than a minute later around 60 miles away. That's what he thinks he saw. And I'm sure he thinks he saw that, and he saw something like that, but he doesn't know what he saw. What he probably saw was an optical illusion. That just tricked his eye and his brain, and, you know, it happens. He said that what he experienced was well beyond the material science and capabilities of blah, 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 blah. All right. So, Mr. Fravor, with all due respect, you didn't experience anything. You saw something on a screen that looked weird. We all saw it, and it looked I saw it, but I didn't experience it. And I'm not prepared to say that anything was well beyond the material science and capabilities if I can't touch it and feel it and measure it and test it. But that doesn't matter because we just want to get all this out there. We want to get that testimony out there because this is either the distraction, the latest distraction by the organs of the criminally insane cult that has seized the civilization globally, apparently. It's either the next distraction or this is the next big thing. And before you know it, Joe Biden will be meeting with aliens. Okay. And I'm not talking about illegal aliens crossing over the border. Joe Biden will not, you won't find him within 60 feet of any of those aliens. But, well, we'll just see. I've already made it clear that I don't believe in extraterrestrial intelligent life. I don't believe in any of that. And I'm not afraid. And if they tell me to lock myself in my house for fear of aliens, I'm not going to do it. I have a feeling most people will, oddly enough. Okay, now, from the aliens we go to the science, really, file, where we have a story that ran its way through the wire. I pulled this down from End Time Headlines, but this one made its way around. You may have seen it on a variety of outlets. Is there a hidden giant planet lurking in our solar system? Uh-huh. That's right. Astronomers have spent many hundreds of hours trying to locate a ninth planet that they call Planet Nine. Or as some people call it Planet X. And they say they're looking for it because the solar system as we know it doesn't really make sense without a giant planet that we just can't see. That's right. Without an allegedly missing ninth planet, our solar system, the orbits of... Here we go. When we look at really distant objects such as dwarf planets beyond Pluto, we find their orbits are a little unexpected. There's a scientific term for you. A little unexpected. Quote, they move on very large elliptical oval-shaped orbits, are grouped together and exist on an incline compared to the rest of the solar system. When astronomers use a computer to model what gravitational forces are needed for these objects to move like this, they find that a planet at least 10 times the mass of the Earth would have been required to cause this. Unquote. And so they're on the search for this giant, invisible, hidden planet that we haven't seen, even though we've been staring into the solar system with telescopes for 300 years. We haven't seen this giant planet because... Well, the reason we haven't seen it is because it doesn't exist. Let's see. The news article goes on. The question is, where is this planet? Now, listen to this sentence. The problem we have now is trying to confirm if these predictions and models are correct. The only way to do that is to find Planet Nine. So, hold on a second. I'm not a scientist. Okay, I don't have a degree. But shouldn't that sentence read, quote, the problem we have now is trying to confirm if these predictions and models are correct or not? What happened to the or not? Is that not possible? That your models and predictions are wrong? I mean, I'm not a scientist, but I think a scientist is supposed to leave open the possibility that his model or his predictions are wrong. But that's not in that sentence because... Well, they're not scientists. Anyway, that's the definition of a circular argument. We've got to find out if our predictions are correct. The only way to do it is to find the planet. Oh, well, okay. Anyway, there is a technical paper written by Rob Brown that posits very convincingly that the argument of the perihelion is answered by evidence that these so-called dwarf planets... By the way, this article reports these as dwarf planets as if they know that's what they are. They have no idea what they are. They just say they're dwarf planets because they're allowed to say whatever they want. Anyway, the argument of perihelion is answered by evidence that these objects originated from within our own solar system. That argument has been convincingly made by Rob Brown in a technical paper, and I'll link to that in the show summary so that you can, in the blog, so that you can read it for yourself. It's the math, and all of that is way above my pay grade, but Rob's pretty good at math, and his paper has been through peer review, and nobody's been able to refute it. In fact, he's convinced a number of people. Okay, so from that craziness and insanity, we move deeper into the science... Really, file, where the James Webb Telescope has detected water vapor within 100 million miles of a star where rocky planets are forming. This is according to the Washington Examiner. And the folks analyzing the data from the James Webb Telescope are allowed to say that rocky planets are forming, even though they don't really know that that's what's happening. They're just allowed to say that. How do they know rocky planets are forming? Well, they don't, but they're allowed to say it. And if you question it, you're not a scientist. You're a science denier. The scientists studying the discovery have come up with two scenarios. Okay, so they found water vapor. That I believe. That's I at least acknowledge that that's a possibility that they found water vapor. Now listen to this. The scientists studying the discovery have come up with two scenarios for where the water came from. They say it either formed in place or it moved from the outer disk to the inner disk. So neither of those statements actually says where the water actually came from. Meaning, how did it form initially? That would be the question of where it came from. They say, well, it was either there when we looked or it moved there. Okay. Well, forgive me if I'm nonplussed by your response. Anyway, the Webb telescope was sent into space in December 2021 and has been confirming creationist predictions and suspicions ever since. It's been a true blessing. And so, by the way, the Bible says that God created waters throughout the entire universe on day one of creation. And so the creationist prediction would be that if you look out there, one of the things you're probably going to see is water. And we are back, ladies and gentlemen, where we're going to touch base with Vivek Ramaswamy. Vivek Ramaswamy, are you familiar with Vivek Ramaswamy? He asked, is extremely attractive. Indian. I believe he is of Indian heritage, yes. He is running for president, is Vivek Ramaswamy. And this comes to us from the Politics File via HeadlineUSA.com. Ezekiel Losecki reports that Vivek Ramaswamy has said he will not sign a federal abortion ban. Why? Because he's unapologetically pro-life.
Oh, that guy. I know.
Uh-huh. So he's unapologetically pro-life, which means he's not going to apologize for being pro-life. I would think, he says he won't ban abortion. So I think he's unwilling to provide an apologetic for his pro-life. Anyway, so he says, quote, I would not support a federal abortion ban of any kind. Okay, so let's stop right there, Vivek. Now, Vivek might be a Ramaswamy, but English is his first language. And he's been to university. So, Vivek, there's only one kind of ban. There's a ban. The definition of a ban is to allow none. Okay? It's from banish. None. There aren't different kinds of bans. There's only one kind of ban. So why do you say you would not support a federal abortion ban of any kind? It almost seems like you don't know what a ban is. And I think that that is endemic throughout the political community. They don't know what a ban is anymore. Anyway, Vivek Ramaswamy goes on to say, quote, when asked why he would not support a federal ban on the killing of innocent children, he says, quote, because I am grounded in constitutional principles, I think this is a state's issue. So whether or not innocent people can be murdered in Vivek Ramaswamy's economy it's a state's issue. If Mississippi wants to legalize rape, and if Indiana wants to legalize kidnapping, it's a state's issue. You know, like killing children. And so what this story drives home, the most important legacy of Samuel Alito and the so-called most pro-life Supreme Court ever will be that they taught the pro-lifers to settle for some child killing and no right to life. That's the legacy of Samuel Alito. He fired the last shot. He fired the final shot in the culture war, and it killed his side. Although I'm not sure if he was really on the side of an inalienable right to life. I'm not so sure he was on our side. I'm not sure. I'm not so sure any of them have been on our side for quite some time. Those of us who think that every human being is born with an inalienable right to life endowed by God to that human being. Is that too extreme? It is for most people. And thanks to Samuel Alito, it has now been codified in law, and the entire pro-life industry will now work to regulate the killing of innocent people in various ways. Not that they hadn't been doing that for some time, but now the right to life, that's been taken off the table. We don't have to fight about that anymore. And that's going to lead to a bloodbath. The fact that the last bastion of godliness on the planet and the most influential political entity on the planet has eliminated the God-given right to life, that's going to lead to terrible, horrible, awful things. All right. And we can already see it. We move to the Eastern Front, where China's foreign minister has disappeared. Not that he was fired. Not that he was sacked. He disappeared like nobody's seen him in about a month. Uh-huh. And then last week, he was suddenly replaced by his predecessor. And he still hasn't been seen. His whereabouts are unknown. There has been weeks of speculation about his fate in the Chinese media. That's for the people who haven't been afraid to ask about it. Most people are simply afraid to ask about what happened to the guy who was very popular and powerful and influential, a good friend of the premier, and he suddenly disappears. So imagine if the American Secretary of State disappeared and all indications were that the president was involved. Imagine that. And then imagine being afraid to ask about it for fear of a similar fate, right? You don't want to get disappeared, for crying out loud. Just imagine that happening in America. I mean, that could never happen here, right? Could it? Memo to Devin Archer, lock your doors tonight. Okay. But Devin Archer's not the Secretary of State or anything like that. But so anyway, we probably won't have to imagine much longer. So let's go now. Speaking of the aliens, Heartland Tri-State Bank of Elkhart, Kansas was closed last week by the state bank commissioner. That's a nice way of saying the bank collapsed. We don't like to say collapse. So we've got an FDIC receivership and assumption agreement, and the bank's going to be purchased by Dream First Bank. And the bank's going to reopen right on time Monday morning as Dream First Bank. And checks will continue to be processed, and there's nothing to see here, ladies and gentlemen. Just move on. Have you heard? There might be aliens! Okay. Now, speaking of aliens, we go to Chase Bank. This is another one from the Mark of the Beast file. J.P. Morgan Chase Bank terminated a number of bank accounts associated with Dr. Mercola. Uh-huh. Yes. Dr. Mercola is a Florida-based health retailer. He sells vitamins and he gives advice. So J.P. Morgan Chase shut down his bank account along with personal accounts of his employees and their families. Uh-huh. Dr. Joseph Mercola is well known for his criticism of COVID-19 policies and vaccinations. And on top of that, to add insult to injury, Dr. Mercola promotes natural health. So he's obviously a threat to J.P. Morgan Chase. J.P. Morgan Chase does not want to put themselves in a position to incur troubles because they handle Dr. Mercola's checking account. And so just to be safe, they just shut it all down. Dr. Mercola's employees speculate that these moves against them may be politically driven. triggered by Mercola's dissenting stance on the public health narrative around COVID-19 and other things. Yes. Yes. Ask Dr. Mercola, buying and selling are difficult without a bank account. When you suddenly find yourself without a bank account, it's very difficult to buy and sell things. And if you don't take the mark, you won't be able to buy or sell. It's just a preview of things to come, that's all. Just a taste, just a foretaste. So let's go from there now over to, we'll go from America over to Europe, where we have a system here in America where there is no serious effort to actually stop crime by implementing the proper punishments for crimes, but criminal activity has instead become an industry. And a lot of people earn their living in the industry and are looking forward to comfortable retirements, having served honorably in that industry. And the same thing's happening in Europe, where in Brussels, a jury reached a verdict finally this Tuesday past over Belgium's deadliest peacetime attack ever, suicide bombings at the Brussels airport and a subway station back in 2016, suicide bombings that killed 32 people. The bombings were claimed by the Islamic State group, and a bunch of guys were arrested. And the evidence against them was overwhelming. There were 10 defendants, including Salah Abdeslam, who's on trial for this case, although he's already serving a life sentence for his role in the attacks at the Bataclan Theater, that massacre. Do you remember that one? That was where they walked into a theater full of thousands of people and just opened up with machine guns and just massacred people. All of the suspects, the terrorists in Brussels, were tried on charges including murder, attempted murder, and participation in blah, 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 and other charges because, yeah, that's the way we do things. The 12 jurors deliberated since early July over some 300 questions that the court asked them to consider before reaching a verdict. The case has been plodding along since 2016. And at the end of the day, after everything, after all the blood and the carnage and the body parts blasted all over, and the people crippled for life by these terrorist maniacs, some of the defendants could face up to 30 years in prison, including Salah Abdeslam, who's already serving a life sentence, but they'll add 30 years to that. And a bureaucrat will process all that paperwork for the better part of 3 months. And then maybe she'll retire at the end of that. That'll be her final duty in the justices will be to process the extra 30 years for the guy who's serving life for massacring people at a concert. Just shocking and unbelievable. But over here in America, we have a similar system. More than two dozen people were arrested and charged during what the DA's office in Montgomery, Texas calls Operation Hydra. That was a crackdown on child sex abuse material being shared on the internet by perverts and creeps and the exploitation of said children. So they have Operation Hydra as their crackdown. 28 people from 17 states were arrested in the month-long sting. The operation took place over 12 months. During that 12 months, children were being abused by these creeps, pedophiles, and perverts. But because the justice system is what it is, the cops just had to sit and watch until they found enough evidence to nab a few of them. And in that whole 12 months, not a single conviction yet, and certainly no executions, and nor shall there be any executions of any of the creeps and perverts who were caught red-handed in the Operation Hydra dragnet. Not only will there be no executions, anyone convicted of anything like this should be executed, that's all. But not only will they not be executed, some of the perpetrators will likely be arrested in some future operation, some future justice system industry operation, because we have a justice industry that relies on a steady stream of criminals and crime. And it's not focused on any serious effort to actually end such criminal activity. You know how you end this kind of activity? You execute these bastards when you catch them. And then the other creepy weirdo perverts are afraid to do it because they're creepy, weak-minded, perverted scum. And you scare them into not participating in this by killing them with extreme prejudice and no quarter. All right, now. One more from the end of the world file. A Chicago man stabbed his girlfriend 150 times. And he killed her. The couple had had an on-and-off relationship for about 5 years. They were together again at the time of the murder. Now, that's very insightful journalism for the reporter. He lets us know that they were together at the time that he stabbed her to death. Okay. Very insightful. Chicago's 911 center received a call from the maniac's phone saying it's a bad day. He said it was a bad day as he stabbed his girlfriend 150 times to death. The killer opened the door of the police when they arrived around 9 p.m., and he was just sitting inside the doorway, bleeding from his hands, covered with her blood. Officers found the couple's two children, both younger than 3 years old. They were not injured. Wow. Oh, they were injured. Just not physically at that moment, but my goodness, wow. The medical examiner identified upwards of 150 stab wounds, consistent with having been made by scissors. The maniac told police that the couple had argued and then everything went black, and then he just remembers blood everywhere. And then he remembers trying to clean it up. Okay. This guy was convicted of domestic battery in 2006, aggravated domestic battery in 2007. That was other women that he beat, not the woman that he killed. So anyway, note to young people out there. On and off relationships are, well, they're immoral, but they're also dangerous. And even more dangerous today in this culture of legalized drugs and unrestrained immorality. On and off relationships could prove deadly. Bad idea. On and off relationships. All right. So it was the end of the world for the girlfriend. And apparently she's the mother of the children. What does it say? The couple's two children. Okay, just horrible. I hope somebody can take care of those kids. Only Jesus can heal what those kids have been through. Only Jesus Christ himself. It takes an act of God to heal hurt like that. Wow. Okay, now finally, and we'll end with this, from the war file, we've just been informed that the Biden syndicate, I'm sorry, they call it the Biden administration. The Biden administration is hunting for malware from Chinese attackers in critical infrastructure systems that support U.S. bases worldwide. The New York Times reported on Saturday that the malware was discovered by Microsoft and may be just one example of a larger Chinese operation to plant malicious code dating back at least a year. So it's quite possible that since Joe Biden was installed in office, that the Chinese have been actively sowing into our military infrastructure malware that at any given moment could cripple significant and important defense systems. So is anybody shocked that this could be the case? I mean, you've basically got an empty-headed sock puppet who quite often doesn't even know if he's awake, has been installed as the President of the United States, who, by the way, he is the leader of the military. He's the commander-in-chief of the military. He's the chief. He's the guy at the tip of the spear defending us from our enemies. And he doesn't even know if he's awake sometimes. He's almost as bad as Mitch McConnell. And he's the president. Well, Don't worry. The Chinese are, it's not like they're out to hurt anyone. It's not like they're having any trouble there in their own country for which they might look for an external enemy to distract their citizenry from the fact that they've destroyed the economy and the lives of millions of people and enslaved and murdered millions of people over the course of a century, for which an awful lot of people are really ready to get even with them. Don't think the Chinese would do anything drastic in those circumstances. Chinese efforts to infect important networks are far more extensive than experts realized at first. Okay. So, in response, the White House has convened military intelligence and homeland security right there in the Situation Room. And they're meeting, maybe right now, to devise a plan of action. Yeah. Administration officials have also begun briefing members of Congress about the infiltration of our greatest natural threat on the planet, the Red Communist Chinese. How are they allowed to be planting code in a anyway, nature abhors a vacuum, folks. And America's executive branch is just one big giant sucking sound, drawing fire from all quarters. All right, that's the Weekly Worldview for this week. Thank you for tuning in. Should the Lord tarry, we'll return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.